Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Pneumaticos. I am your host, Dr. Josiah Rich. And this morning, we are continuing the topic which we began on yesterday's show. On yesterday's show, we entered into the world of Job. And we did a brief introduction to Job and his significance for the believing one. We noted that Job is the oldest book in the biblical literature, and it is a very profound and compelling work in that Job deals with the odyssey, that is, the justice of God in the face of evil, human suffering, and the freedom of God. And so this triad, as it were, is held in tension in the book of Job in a very powerful manner. Today's show is entitled Job's Resolve Within the Milieu of the Unthinkable. This book is divided in these chapters 1 and 2, we have the encounter of Job with Satan. In chapters 3 through 37, there is the encounter between Job and his friend. And that section will be very, very interesting. Job and God, the encounter between Job and God is given to us in chapters 38 through 42. When we left off on yesterday's show, we left off on chapter 1, verse 9, and we dealt with the question that the whole Satan posed to God about the person of Job. Indeed, through the Satan, Job's worship, Job's life has been, at least from the viewpoint of the whole Satan, Job's life is selfish and self-centered, and he only worships God for what he can get, for what God can do for him. And so, hence, we have the question in verse Job 1:9 from whole Satan. Does Job fear God for nothing? Now, on the face of it, some may venture to answer this question without considering what is going on in these few words, in these six words. Because the whole Satan has the ability to manipulate and contort and twist and distort language for his own end. And for the artless or the simple ones who dare to venture to answer such a proposition, they will quickly find themselves, let us say, disarmed. And so notice in verse 10, have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? God's providential concern, God's providential provisions, that is providio, providence, to see before, God's providential care and provision for Job is known and acknowledged by the Satan. He knows that God has placed some limits beyond which he cannot go and move in on the life of Job without the permission of God. And we call this the God's permissive will. We have bole in the Greek, which refers to God's determined will. And then we have the other word, fellow, which refers to God's permissive will. And so, have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? Everything he has. So, you have blessed his, the work of his hands so that his flocks and herds are spread throughout the land. In Job's day, an individual's wealth was measured by livestock. But stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and surely he will curse you to your face. So this is the gauntlet. This is the challenge that the Satan has brought before God in the court of heaven. And I want to spend some time with this because when we get to the section that is chapter 3, which begins the encounter, chapters 3 through 37, which begins the encounter with Job and his friends, I want you to see that these individuals, that is Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, have not been made privy to this encounter in heaven. They have no idea of this encounter, and they will not have this background. And so when these three individuals, and there's one more who will come at the end, and his is rather stereocomical, that is the insight that he will bring. So there's a fourth friend, as it were, that it will come in on this thing, but they will not have this background. And so I want you to, when we get there, I want you to listen carefully to their arguments and to their theological insight and listen very carefully to their therapeutic approaches to Job's situation. And the fact that they will begin from a very limited epistemological viewpoint will greatly curtail their ability to provide an accurate understanding of Job's situation. Now, just to note about his friends, we will note in chapter 6 that his friends heard, they will hear his words in the midst of his affliction, but they will not listen to his heart. But we will get there later. Let's go on. Verse 12 of chapter 1, the Lord said to Satan, very well then, everything he has is in your hand. The Hebrew yad is the word for hands. But on the man himself, do not lay a finger. And so Satan is going to move in into Job's life through the permissive will of God. Without the permissive will of God, he cannot. We are told in the book of Paul's letters to Ephesians that we are to be angry and sin not. And then Paul says, when we do this, because we're to note Paul's words from God, be ye angry and sin not, because it is anger will provides an open door for the enemy to move into an individual's life, and because Paul says that we remain angry and we create a state of anger, it is true that the weakness of an angry moment that the enemy can move into an individual's life and assert his control. Indeed, Paul writes that when we do this, then the enemy gets a base of operation to launch a military campaign against the life of the individual. And so please understand that Ephesians 6 is where Paul talks about the armor of God. The armor of God, we are told to put on the armor of God. And the tenses in the Greek make it very clear that we are to put on the armor of God and never take it off. See, we must do this in order to understand the methodias. That is the strategic method of the enemy against our lives. The enemy and Job is going to launch a military operation to dismantle, to take down Job's life. This is never random. It is never a whim. It is very systematic. It is very systematic. And we're going to see something about the power that the enemy possesses as we move through the book. So we read, then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord, and it's from the face of the Lord. One day when Job's sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the oldest brother's house, a messenger came to Job and said, the oxen were plowing, and the donkeys, that is, the she-asses, were grazing nearby, and the Sabian attacked and carried them off. And they put the servants to the sword, and I am the only one who has escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another messenger came and said, the fire of God, that is, light, fell from the sky and burned up the sheep and the servants, and I am the only one who has escaped to tell you. But in the book of Exodus, thunder is referred to as the voices of God. I love that. And this is in relation to the story. We call it the judgments or the plagues that God used against Egypt. So the thunder is referred to as the voices of God. And so note the overlapping that is going on here. Verse 17, while he was still speaking, another messenger came and said, the Chaldeans formed three raiding parties and swept down on your camels and carry them off. They put the servants to the sword, and I am the only one who has escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, yet another messenger came and said, your sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the oldest brother's house, when suddenly a mighty wind swept in from the desert and struck the four corners of the house. It collapsed on them, and they are dead. And I am the only one who has escaped to tell you. Well, this mighty wind that is referred to here is the Sirocco of Palestine. The Sirocco is an intense burning wind with very powerful, very swift, with major destructive power. And notice verse 20. At this, Job got up tore his robe and shaved his head. And then he fell to the ground and worshiped. This is very interesting to me and very powerful, because now Job has experienced a reversal of fortune. That is, his once fabulous life, filled with the evidence of the blessings of God upon his wealth, upon his children, upon all that he possessed. These things, including his family, has now been swept away in a moment. This is the milieu, this is the crucible of the unthinkable. And Job will not see himself as a victim. Job will not take on a victim identity in this situation. Yes, he has suffered traumatic loss. And let me say that the word trauma is the Greek word for wound. And yes, he has trauma in his heart. He is wounded. And we're going to see something else emerge about the person of Job. Notice he tore his robe, which is a symbol in that culture of grief. He shaved his head. This is a picture of intense grief and sorrow. This is a picture of sudden, unexpected grief. This is a very, very compelling portrait of a man who has lost everything. The intense suffering, the unspeakable nature of what has happened and what is going on in his heart emerges for us to see. Verse 21, and this is what he said when he fell down on the ground in worship. Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised. And here we have a picture of affliction and worship. When I worked at a medical center as a chaplain intern, I went to visit a patient who had rheumatoid arthritis of the lungs. And she was a very wonderful person who taught me a lot. And she told me that the medication that she was taking to help her with the pain was not working. And she said that the pain would seize her and the pain would feel like life to her body. And she told me that when she felt that a pain event was coming on, she would begin praising God. She would begin worshiping God. And it was that act that she said helped her. She said to me that she turned her pain into prayer. And the very words that she used and the way that she spoke of this new understanding of the presence of God in her life drew me to her, and it ignited within my heart a new appreciation for the people of God and what God does to them and does for them in a situation that I could, in a way that I could not understand. I know I've had my unique situations. I know what my sufferings have been in certain areas. But the way she was able to share, and we were able to have communion, and her suffering and what it, you know, what I was able to see, and the insight I was able, what she gave me, with regard to who God was for her, this created a sacred space, and the worship that I shared with her was silent and arcane, but yet it was profound and moving. And so she said she turned her pain into praise. Another physician said that he realized that when dealing with patients who are dying, that the thing that was most interesting to him was the fact that these persons were suffering not so much, you know, physical pain events, but spiritual distress. And so this is why pneumaticos is important to me. That is to consider the many dimensions of who we are as persons. To consider our profound experiences with God. I met another lady who told me as soon as I walked into her hospital room, she said she knew that I was the chaplain intern. But that day she said to me, "I don't believe in God." I said, "That's fine. I'm here to see you and to hear you." And then she shared some things with me about what was going on in her life. And it reminded me of this situation with Jill. Affliction and worship are given to us here in chapter 1. Affliction and worship. What the faithful do, what the pneumaticos individual does, that is the spiritual one does. This was sudden, unexpected grief. And so Job went before God in worship. Job bowed before God. Job confessed the temporal nature of his life. Job confessed that naked he came here into this world. And then Job confessed, "Naked I will depart." What a message that so many are lacking today. We came here naked, and we depart naked. We are looking and considering the emuna of Job. Emuna is a Hebrew word that means steadiness. Or stability, and or stability of the times. It has to do with the faithfulness of Yah or Yahweh. And what we're going to learn from Job is that Faithing is an activity toward Yahweh in spite of circumstances, events, situations, and disasters. Job will still acknowledge through his grief process the sovereignty of God. And so herein are the tensions that we consider. Theodicy, that is, the justice of God in the face of evil. Human suffering and the freedom of God. And please note that in the Hebrew mind, we're dealing with a different reality. We're dealing with concrete reality as opposed to abstract intellection or mental reality. Evil is not looked at as an abstraction in this culture. Evil is not made an impersonal, remote entity or thing or entity. Evil is real, and evil is personified. Evil is given to us through the person of the Satan in this situation. And so Job knows the reality of evil, and he is suffering. We read is something remarkable in verse 22 of chapter 1. In all this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. I could write a whole book on this, this one verse. And all this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. See, traumatic events, trauma, can move us in certain ways and can create some very interesting viewpoints, because trauma is about pain, the reality of pain, and the confession that can come through pain. And so when we move into chapter 2, we shall see that the pain moves from Job's the loss of Job's family and his possessions. His body is going to be attacked. Therefore, his soul will be attacked. The man himself is attacked. The man is set on edge. Never in the book of Job will we encounter nihilism. We will struggle. His struggle with himself and what he knows about God will be brought to the forefront. The reality of who God is for him will be laid out for us so that we can see that in the midst of his trauma, Job has a very vital message to us about who God is. So we will see that Job's soul is indeed controlled by his awareness of God, his deep understanding of the character of God. I will see with you next time on the Matter Cause. Have a wonderful day.